happened. She shrugged. We don't really need to say goodbye, do we? She waggled her finger in my direction. I mean, we're still neighbors, and that means you better come see me. She pointed at the little tree John was unloading from the truck with help from Everett. Do you know what kind of tree that is? A sycamore? I guessed. Zell laughed. Well, yes, we thought it would be fitting to get a sycamore, but that's not what I call it. I raised one eyebrow, something I'd been teaching myself to do. It always made Cutter laugh. What do you call it? The miracle tree, she said. The miracle tree? It made me think about that miracle grow stuff we used in Zell's garden.
Yep,
she nodded. We're going to plant it in the front yard so we can all see it as we drive by. It'll be a nice reminder of the miracle that happened here this summer. I looked at all the people gathered there. Lila and Alec running around with Pilar and Zara. Jency and Lance making goo-goo eyes at each other. Wright looking a lot happier than she had when she showed up at Zell's the other night. We had a lot of miracles going around. We probably needed a whole forest full of trees in my front yard. Zell put her arm around me and kissed the top of my head. You were my miracle, she said, her voice so low I didn't know if I'd heard her right. But then I looked up into her eyes, and I knew I had. I had to change the subject before she made me cry. Well, you know what I don't want in my garden? I asked. What's that? A pond, I said, and we both cracked up. Hey, Zell, Jency hollered. We need you over here. Zell gave me a little smile and walked away. As soon as she did, Lila, Pilar, and Zara came over. It's really cool what you did, Pilar said. Beside her, Lila and Zara nodded their agreement. I shrugged because I didn't know what else to say. I wasn't quite ready to talk about what I did, or who I found, or how I came to find her.
Want to help us plant the flowers? They asked.
Sure, I said. They handed me a trowel with a yellow handle, just like the one I used at Zell's house. I looked around me to see Alec and Cutter standing together in the bed of the truck, helping to pass out the plants. Lance took a flat of pink geraniums from Alec, then handed them off to Jency, but made her give him a kiss before he'd let go of them, which made Pilar and Zara giggle. Bright braided Lila's hair so it wouldn't be in her face. She did such a good job that we all said we wanted her to do ours.
You're good at braiding. You should have a little girl someday, Lila told her.
Everett and Bright looked at each other. Actually, Bright said to Lila, we think we might adopt one.
Cool,
Lila said, then bounced away to help dig holes for the flowers. We worked until the sun went down, and we couldn't see to work anymore. When we were done, John ordered pizzas, and we all sat on blankets in the front yard to eat, dirty and tired and hungry. I don't think pizza ever tasted better. Mom came home from work with Gary, the ambulance guy. She cried when she saw what they'd done for us, and then Gary went to the store and bought beers for the adults and sodas for the kids. Later, Everett disappeared and then came back with boxes of fresh, warm donuts from Krispy Kreme. And though Zell said, oh, I couldn't, she did. We stayed that way past everybody's bedtime, even the adults, but no one made a move to leave. Alec and Cutter fell asleep on the blankets, tired from chasing each other around in the hot sun all day. I sat with Zell on one side and Mom on the other, and I didn't think about James Doyle or Hannah Sumner or Cutter, quiet and still at the bottom of that pool, even once. We laughed and talked long into the night, and it felt warm, cozy, familiar. To quote that entrance sign, it felt like family, a family I never expected to have. Jency motioned for the girls to keep up and made a silly face at them, attempting to lighten the mood. It could be so serious sometimes. She supposed that was her fault, but she was doing what she could to be a different kind of mother.
Are you sure about this?
Zara asked, her voice quavering slightly. Jency smiled. Yes, I'm sure. She kept her voice light, wanting to put her daughters at ease. Both of them had heard the story of what had happened to poor Hannah Sumner. Though all the parents had attempted to keep the details from the kids, Jency had seen them gathered at the pool in little clusters, parsing what they knew, creating their own narrative that was, Jency suspected, probably worse than the actual truth. Hannah Sumner had escaped. She would never be the same again, but she was alive. She had a future ahead of her that was as bright as she chose to make it. Jency supposed that was all anyone could ask for in this broken, screwed-up world. She moved branches and brambles from their path, clearing the way for her girls as they ventured deeper into the woods. Neither girl thought this was the best idea, but Jency insisted. She'd lured them away from the house with the promise of an adventure. The thing about adventure was, it usually required at least a modicum of danger. They pressed forward and finally found the clearing. She tried to see it through their eyes, to remember what it felt like when she'd found it as a child, how it had felt like hers from the moment she saw it. Now she would bequeath it to her girls, passing it along as if it were hers to give. They looked at the copse of trees with wide eyes, then back at her, the concern on their faces giving way to excited grins. "It's a hideaway," she explained. "Can we go in?"
"Sure,"
she urged, motioning with her hands for them to enter. For a moment she felt fear creep in, a fist gripping her heart. Maybe it wasn't the best idea to show them this place. Look what she'd done here, after all. She wasn't sure she wanted either girl holing up here with a boy. And yet, that had come much later. In the early days, it had been only about having a place of her own, a place to escape to, a place to dream. Since it looked like they'd be with her parents for a while longer, the girls could use such a place. She crawled through the branches after them. Pilar hugged herself and looked around, delight etched on her face. "This is so cool," she breathed. Zara turned around and around in circles, her arms outstretched and her face tilted toward the little patch of sky. She stopped and staggered around, dizzy from the spinning. She lurched into the waiting arms of Jency, who planted a kiss on top of her head. Pilar edged closer to the two of them, and they stood together in silence.
"Can we show this place to Lila and Alec?" Pilar asked, her voice still laced with a breathy excitement.
The thought of Lance's kids made her think of Lance, made her smile. He'd talked her out of Virginia, talked her into seeing what the future held in Sycamore Glen. They were taking it slow, but they were moving forward.
"You can show it to whoever you'd like," she said. "It's yours now."
"I might want to keep it a secret," Zara said, burying her head in the crook of Jency's arm.
"Well, that's for you girls to discuss."
"And you think we'll be safe here?"
Pilar, always the responsible one, asked. Jency thought about how to answer.
"I always was."
And as she said it, she realized it was true.
"It's kind of dark in here," Zara said, doubt in her voice.
"Let me show you how to fix that."
Jency grinned and walked over to the border of trees. She looked over her shoulder at the girls as they watched with interest. She beckoned them over and gestured for them to stick their hands into the branches.
"Okay, now pull," she instructed. "Pull hard."
Together they tugged the branches apart, pulling wider and harder as, together, they let the light in. Zell. As she walked to her car, Zell spotted a single yellow leaf on the drive, a harbinger of summer's end. School was starting in a few days, but when she'd asked Kaylee if she'd gotten her teacher assignment yet, she'd just said,
"Ugh, don't talk about it."
Kaylee still turned up at Zell's door quite often, making the trek across the neighborhood with Cutter in tow. His gait was still a bit off, and sometimes he had trouble accessing the right words, but other than that, he was doing well. He was healing. She looked across the street at James's empty house. It was already starting to show signs of neglect. Some kind soul had found a place for Jesse to live, and of course James would never likely see life outside prison after what he'd done. Someone had graffitied their thoughts about what should become of him across the front door after the press finally went away. John had made noises about going over and painting over it eventually. He and Lance were trying to keep the grass cut, but they were busy, and it didn't always get done in a timely manner. There were still marks where some kids had egged the house late one night. Zell had been awakened in the wee hours of the morning by the rhythmic thunks of eggs hitting the wood. She'd gone to the window to see figures moving around in the yard, the white projectiles shining in the moonlight as they took flight again and again. She supposed she should have been alarmed, but all she felt was fascination. This was how people healed. They went and did something, anything they could, to redeem the situation. It was time for her to do something, too. She was starting with the doctor's appointment she had in 30 minutes. She would finally submit her knee for examination. She would perch on a cold, sterile table and answer his questions. She might even tell the whole truth about how it had happened. She would discuss surgery and rehab. She would ask how soon she could start exercising. She would let herself dream of the day she would run again. Kaylee. Zell gave me a bulletin board to put up in my room for all the news clippings and photos about what happened. People said I was like David the shepherd boy, using a stone to topple a giant. The interviewers always asked the same questions. How did you know Hannah was there? What made you throw that rock? Do you consider yourself a hero? Will you and Hannah be friends forever? I even got paid money to come on TV and talk about what happened, even though I'm not supposed to say I did. And I got the reward money for finding Hannah, too. My mom said that made me a double hero. It was enough money to be able to put a down payment on a house of our own, even though moving didn't feel so urgent now that we didn't live in the eyesore of the neighborhood anymore, thanks to all the hard work our neighbors did. Mom and I agreed we would take our time and find the best house, a house of our own, something I never dreamed we'd have. I told my mom my only request was we had to stay in Sycamore Glen. When people ask me what I think a hero is, which they always do, I tell them about Cutter, how he nearly drowned, but after he got better, he got back in the same pool that nearly killed him. He stood on the edge, his toes curling into the cement as if he was grabbing hold. I could tell from the look on his face that he was thinking about turning away. I wanted to whisper in his ear that no one would blame him if he did, put my arm around him, and walk him over to the drink machine to buy him a Dr. Pepper. He could try again next summer, or he could stay out of the water forever. But then I saw him look at that water like it was his opponent in a wrestling match he wanted to win. I saw his face get that determined look that I think I probably had when I launched that rock into that glass. His eyes found mine, and I nodded that I understood. I nodded that he'd be okay. His feet left the edge, and though his toes remained curled, he flew into the air. As I watched, I imagined that those same arms I'd felt that night were underneath him, holding him close and throwing him up at the same time, helping him fly without letting him fall. I heard everyone around me inhale as we watched my brother break the water's surface. No one dared to breathe while he was under the water, and when his head popped back up, everyone started to clap, their held breaths all coming out in one relieved rush of air. Someone hugged me, and someone else yelled, "Go, Cutter!" At that moment, I thought of the day the spider nearly blocked our entrance to the pool, and how we never knew what message he might have spelled in his web. And I realized that it didn't matter what the spider said. It mattered that we knocked that web down and walked right in. We hope you have enjoyed our presentation of The Things We Wish Were True by Mary Beth Mayhew Whalen. Performed by Taylor Ann Cron. Directed by Jonathan Pennock. Performance copyright 2016 by Brilliance Audio. All rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance Audio titles, please call the following toll-free number, 1-800-222-3225, or visit our website at www.brilliancedaudio.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, P.O. Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan, 49417.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.